You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave talking about the Packers 33-32 single-point defeat at the hands of the Atlanta Falcons. Dave, I think this was one of those cases where the Packers, you know, they lost, but it kind of felt like a win in some ways. You know, we have games where they win and it feels like a loss. I think this is kind of the opposite. You know, when I heard that they were going to be without the number of players that they were, you know, Clay Matthews is out, Ty Montgomery, Randall Cobb. I mean, a lot of injuries to key players playing on the road against a good team in Atlanta. I figured they were going to get waxed. I thought, you know, Julio Jones was going to, you know, run wild, especially playing against the Packers, what, number four cornerback. But it turned out that they hung in, lost, but still they lost a close game, and a game that actually some people, like Bob McGinn, thought they really should have won when they got the ball back with 31 seconds to go in the fourth quarter. What's your take on that, Dave? Packers positioned to win with only 31 seconds, but they had two timeouts. What did you think?
Yeah, I won't bore you with my history of how I watched this game in an airport. But I think when I first watched it and saw the end, I was ticked off. I was mad they lost. I thought this was a game. I didn't see the beginning of the game. I walked into the game or saw it when they were winning 24-19, and I later saw it on the NFL Rewind. I watched on the condensed version and got to see sort of the whole game and saw that they played pretty well. First half, I mean, defense gave up yards, which is what I think we thought they would do, but they were in a great position to win at the end. And when they lost, I was upset. Stormed out of that airport and went to my hotel. But I think as time has passed, kind of reflecting on it, I feel better about it, which is, I think, is what you're talking about. Just thinking about all the injuries that they had. They played a team that has a very good offense, great receiver, and pretty good quarterback. And, you know, our offense has been really challenged. This, I think everyone kind of went into this game thinking, wow, we could really get beat pretty hard. And we had a great chance of winning. And like you said, in some cases, maybe people would say we should have won. And so I feel better about the loss as it did when I first watched it. Did you feel good about it right away?
Well, I would never say I feel good about a loss. I'm going to be, you know, straight up about that. But I didn't get that feeling I usually do when they lose a game, you know, that feeling of, you know, extreme disappointment, frustration, maybe even a little anger, you know, kind of mixed in there,
sure.
Disappointment, all that kind of stuff. This was, well, I guess part of it was when they went up by 6 points, they got the 2-point conversion after that long drive in the fourth quarter, which I thought was beautifully done by Packers. Yeah, that was absolutely great.
And it was with other receivers too. It wasn't just our traditional, you know, all Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. You had other guys, and that was kind of exciting too, right?
Oh yeah. You know, Davis, stepped up for them, and they got a little bit from Geronimo Allison. They got a little bit from Janice. You know, I mean, it was pretty encouraging the way they were able to pass the ball mainly, but control the clock, go in and score. But I saw, you know, geez, 6 points, that's just begging for a 1-point loss.
Yeah.
And 4 minutes to go. I mean, NFL teams have 4-minute offense. And I thought, yeah, this is what's going to happen against the number one offense in the NFL coming into the game. You know, they got a, you know, respectable quarterback, and the Packers are down guys on defense. You know, they don't have Clay Matthews. Of course, we know a lot about the fact that their three top cornerbacks are out. And let's face it, you know, toward the end of the game, the defense has been on the field a lot, got a lot of yards, are probably a little bit gassed. And sure enough, Atlanta goes down the field and scores. So with 31 seconds left, my expectations weren't that, oh, yeah, that's plenty of time. You know, they're going to get themselves into field position. And Mason Crosby, going to hit the bong and walk out there and nail a 56-yard field goal. It seemed like a long shot. I kept flashing back to the game that you and me and Dr. Klaus saw last year at Lambeau when they lost to the Lions. You know, they got themselves into position to win a last-second field goal, and then it was like a dud. You know, like when they shoot that gun and the flag comes out that says bang. You know, and I thought, okay, this is probably what's going to happen here. So when it didn't happen, I didn't have this extreme sense of disappointment because I was just impressed that they were in the game as much as they were, given their physical situation, given the opponent, and playing on the road. So it wasn't really a gut punch to me the way say I felt after they lost to the Vikings this year. Though that was against a good opponent on the road, that is a game they did not play very well, I thought. And I thought that's a game that they should have won. And it's also the Vikings. You know, you have more emotional stake in that. So this one didn't hit me the same way, although, like, you know, a loss is a loss is a loss.
And you're not alone. I think a lot of people are saying kind of the podcasts, the professional podcasts, people in the paper and other than Bob McGinn are saying, like, I think the Packers are okay. You know, get guys healthy and come back. They're just finding their rhythm on offense, and I think they're going to be okay. And I think there's two reasons for that. Is one, no one in the NFC right now looks good. I mean, who would have thought Minnesota would lose at Chicago? That's huge break.
You talk about flaccid, huh? Wow.
Yeah, that's right. And then their offensive coordinator resigns, which I haven't heard what happened there, but I saw that he quit, it sounded like.
Well, yeah, and the head coach there said, well, I didn't even know he was sick. Like, what? Is something wrong with him besides being frustrated about, you know, the offense not playing well? Is the guy got some kind of illness or something? So that's really a mystery why Norv Turner just suddenly, you know, after a couple of losses, just up and quit. So I think there's more to that story that's probably going to come out in the next few days.
Right. And, you know, the Cowboys look good. They played a tough team.
Yeah.
You know, but they played at home against the Eagles and you know, won in overtime. So they may be, you know, a team that's certainly one to reckon with. They took us down. But even when they played us, I didn't feel like, wow, this is a team we've got a ways to catch up to. I just felt like we played really bad. The other reason I think people are encouraged is when you lose like we have over the last 14 games or so and your offense is so pathetic, it takes my anger level from a 7 to a 10, you know, 10 being the worst. I just can't stand to watch our offense be so terrible. All the three and outs, you know, just stupid plays, dropping balls, you know, no one open kind of stuff. That's sickening. You know, this, what they're doing now, this is what we're used to. They can score a lot of points, and the defense lets you down in the end, and the offense can't sort of score at the end as well. That's been the last couple of years, but we're conditioned to see those kinds of games, right? And we can probably talk about the McGinn article. He talks a lot about that, but at least the offense moved the ball. I mean, and Rodgers has a quarterback rating that's really high.
125.
Yeah, great quarterback rating. Guys are getting open. Although I was surprised, Atlanta seemed to be playing a zone defense against us, and I thought, who does that anymore? I mean, in that kind of defense, Jordy Nelson can run down the field and get open because no one's playing a man-to-man. And I thought, I wonder if they're going to keep doing that. So I didn't see how they played it through the rest of the game. I definitely noticed, I thought early a couple of times, they played the zone. And that is just not the way to play the Packers.
Well, they did do a lot of man, too. You know, when Rodgers had those big runs, that's why he was able to do it, because they were playing man, and so that's when the defenders, you know, run with the receivers. They have their back to the quarterback. So he ran six times for 60 yards. On those occasions, you know, they were in man, and a lot of times teams, I think, are going to that now against the Packers because they want to, you know, rush four guys, you know, contain Rodgers in the pocket, and then they have seven guys back. I also think they're playing some combination coverages. I know they did that with man coverage and then safeties over the top. So, you know, I think it's a variety of things that they're doing. But when they go and do run zone, I think the Packers, you know, they're beating that a lot more than beating man.
Yeah, so I'm encouraged that they have an offense that's more dynamic than it's been 14 games ago, and then we had to watch it for week after week. It sounds like if you're going to play man, if Ty Montgomery comes back, they seem to be able to get some offense by guys coming out of the backfield, short passes, stuff we've been talking about for a long time. if they go to zone, then I think then the offense works well that way too. So it appears that at least offensively we seem to have found our way. That's really encouraging. Now, can the defense stop a team from scoring more than 32 points? Well, you hope so, because look at all the injuries we did have. And even if we'd had one less, if we could have had Clay Matthews.
Exactly.
Just to get one sack at the end there, maybe that could have turned the game around. I was disappointed to see the lack of pressure. I mean, we still had Perry and Peppers and Dante Jones. And so you think, can we get a sack? Can we get some pressure at the end? And they really didn't. I got to tell you, I know I kind of jump on Julius Peppers sometimes, but I watched him really specifically toward the end of that game. When he tires out, he gives you nothing.
Mm-hmm,
I'm really
mm-hmm.
surprised sometimes they play him at the end when he's really kind of just dogging it. I don't. Maybe did he get a sack?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he had a sack on the next to last drive that Atlanta had, and that set up the punt, and then the Packers had the long
That's
drive
right.
to take the 6-point lead. So, I mean, you know, they were getting something from him on that drive, but on the final drive, the decisive one, the one with 4 minutes left to go, they look generally gassed. I mean, that's when they needed, as Gary Ellerson calls him, the hair on fire guy.
Yeah.
And they did not have, you know, that player, that energy. And I think that's when they really felt the loss of Clay Matthews.
Yeah. And he feeds on to other guys. And I think you're right. There was no one there to do that. But so here's the other thing I really want to talk about, Chris, is, all right, so you are Dom Capers at the end of the game, and maybe you've heard other people talk about this, but as they were driving, I thought, let them score. They were running the clock down. Just let them score a touchdown. Let's get the ball back.
Well, they did, basically.
They
wide open guy in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, it didn't appear that they just let it happen, but I suppose letting Jake Ryan cover a receiver is maybe the same thing.
Yeah, but, it was blown coverage. They needed safety help there.
Yeah, but I thought instead of just letting them score, why wouldn't you go all out and blitz like crazy and say, look, two things are going to happen. We're either going to get a stop through sacks, maybe interception if he hurries it, or they're going to score, and we'll have more time on the clock to move down the field and kick a field goal. Now, as it turned out, we did have enough time. We just went out on downs, and that was the end of it. But why wouldn't you be more aggressive on defense, knowing that really the worst case against you is not really that bad of a worst case? And if anything, I would have said, I don't care what happens, we're putting a hit on Matt Ryan. I mean, if it's a late hit, we're going to let them score, we'll get the ball back. Do you think that they just played so conservative, didn't rush the passer, played sort of a bend, don't break, and it ended up breaking? I don't understand sort of that in-between philosophy they seem to show at the end.
Well, I guess the way I would have liked to see them play it, and this is, you know, this is the benefit of hindsight. You know, we're recording this on a Thursday night. You know, we've read everything. We've, you know, heard all the podcasts and stuff. But as I reflect back on that, I guess if I could do it again, you know, or if Dom could do it again, I think they were right to play conservatively when the ball was, you know, still on the other half of the field. When, you know, there was a chance maybe you're going to stop him, you're going to get a three and out, you're going to be able to, you know, do something to get the ball back. But once the clock started winding down and was inside of 2 minutes, and, you know, they had momentum, they had things going their way, yeah, I think that at that point is when I would say, yeah, blitz all out, either get to them and stop the drive, or they score, and then we get a chance to get the ball back. But I don't think you want to do that too early, because I think you want to get the ball back with enough time that you can score, but not so much time that you're going to score and they're going to give them one more chance with 30 seconds left. So it's kind of a balancing act there. But I think in front of the 2-minute warning and when you've got them in their own side of the field, I think you want to play it like they did, because you don't want to, you know, have the big play there hurt you. But yeah, on the other side of 2 minutes, that's a different question. And then I think, yeah, when they're on the 30-yard line, the 20-yard line, sure, blitz. And then if they score, they score. You get the ball back and maybe win it at the end. So I think I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree. I just wouldn't have done it from the get-go. I would have probably milked it out and see if you could have contained them. And then also with the clock situation, making sure you get the ball back with, with enough time, but not too much time.
Yeah, you know, fair enough. So they get the ball. Atlanta has the ball first and 10 on their own 25 with 3 minutes and 52 seconds.
Right.
Get first down. They get to a third down, a third and two with 2 minutes and 31 seconds left. Third and two.
Now, if you can stop them there, you get the ball back. That's a great situation.
Great.
Because because then you got the 2 minute warning and you got a couple of timeouts and you're in a great position. So you got to stop them on third down right there.
Yeah. Although, you know, let's say they do and it's fourth and two, it would be on the, you know, there'd be a, close to 2 minutes left when they probably go for it on a fourth down. So you'd have to make two stops probably.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's first and after that, they get a 12-yard play. It's first and 10 at the Green Bay 33. Gunter hurts himself the play before.
Right. That's not good. Yeah.
No. So at that point now, really, the ball, you just let them score at that point. And I felt they stayed conservative. They marched. They were able to melt the clock down from 2:25 down to 31 seconds. Green Bay got the ball with 31 seconds left in the game.
Right.
I just think, you know, there's kind of a game theory with, you know, as this is playing out, that you should just, like, someone somewhere should just kind of say, let them score or go for broke. It don't just kind of keep playing it the way you're playing, hope for the best, hope for interception. I don't know what they were hoping, I guess, to go.
Well,
they needed to score a touchdown, I suppose, but.
I'm not saying let them score. I'm saying, you know, try something more aggressive, and if they score, okay. I mean, the object is still, you know, to do things that are not going to allow them to score, and that's why, you know, rushing six guys, you know, is something I would have tried, because if it works, great. If it doesn't work and they score, okay,
yeah.
That's not great, but we could, you know, we still have a chance with enough time, you know, to make something happen. I never have liked the idea of just letting a team score, but I do like the idea of changing tactics so that maybe we have a chance to stop them from scoring, but if we don't, that's all right too.
Yeah, I guess, okay, so that's what I would do as well, but I feel like this coaching staff, same with through the GM, is very paint by the numbers. Like, this is how we play it, we're not going to deviate. It takes a long time for them to sort of switch philosophy. The whole offensive scheme took a long time to change. It felt like every radio and podcast was shouting at them to do something different, and they finally kind of picked up on it. But here's a game where you needed some creativity, probably a little bit of a change direction. But nope, we do what we do, and this is what we're going to do all the way to the end. And it just, I feel like that plays into why we lose a lot of these close games at the end. There's not a lot of, I don't know what other word to use, creativity to say, listen, this is what we've got to do. Go for broke. Take some chances. We don't seem to do that. It's kind of a Mike McCarthy, Pittsburgh kind of focused right down the middle kind of approach I feel like he has. And I think that really hurts us, and I thought it hurt us this game.
Well, let me pick up on something that you're saying there, because there's an article that was written by Pete Doherty on PackersNews.com, and it kind of goes to a little bit of what you're saying about a willingness to have a flexible approach to change as your circumstances and situation changes. And Doherty's point is the Packers basically only changed away from their insistence on having a running game and pounding Eddie Lacy in there and changing tactics to, you know, going more wide open for, you know, five receiver sets. The creativity that McCarthy's shown in the last few games, it seems more out of necessity than out of a desire to say what we were doing wasn't working. And I want to read a little passage that Doherty wrote, and I'm reading it because I agree with it. I'd be curious to know what you think of this. And what he says is, the question is, as the weather turns colder and his team gets healthier, will McCarthy give in to the urge to return to more conventional football when playing unconventionally is getting better results? Here's a quote from McCarthy. We're going to throw the ball, but we need to get our run game going because we're not going back to last year. We're going to run the football. We're going to play action pass game. We're going to play to our quarterback. And then Doherty continues. It's worth remembering that we should judge NFL coaches by what they do, not by what they say. and McCarthy's words are open to interpretation. But Aaron Rodgers has played most of his best football of the season in the last six quarters. So I'd think twice about changing course. Climate and improved health at running back be damned. And this is something I think that we have talked about here from time to time, that they are bound and determined to run the football. We're going to be, and maybe this is your, you know, Pittsburgh macho thing, you know, we are, you know, we're going to run it in there. We're going to smash it in there. We're going to be committed to the run. I don't know that that's a good thing to do. I've kind of come around to your opinions on Eddie Lacy. I'm kind of warmed up to the guy. But I think they're better when he's not there, when it forces them to do more of the creative things we've seen him do in the past couple of games, putting a lot of guys into pass patterns, putting wide receivers in the backfield. This time it was six plays with 17 in the backfield. You know, they were running 88 out of there before. You know, they had 18 when he was, you know, there. I even liked Ripkowski, the fact that they were handing him the ball a bunch of times. He kind of looked like John Kuhn. He ran hard. He caught passes. In fact, he did a really good job picking up the blitz. You know, it was different. It was a different look, and it was working. And so I think that they are better when they run less, when they're kind of a 60-40 pass-run team. And I don't know if you agree with that or not. A lot of people I know want to see him, you know, commit to the run, run the ball, hand it off, you know, especially when Lacy's in there, give him 20, 25 carries a game. I think that bogs their offense down.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I'd love to have Lacy healthy, but even if he came back healthy right now, is I would play a lot of Ty Montgomery in the backfield. And imagine if you could get a 10-point lead, then come back with Lacy and start to run the ball more. Because I feel like what Lacy does, I love the way he runs. He breaks tackles. He's elusive for his size. But he is one-dimensional. They never throw him the ball in the backfield. Right. So you don't have to worry about that part of the offense. And if you can cover our receivers man-to-man pretty safely, then the run game becomes pretty tough to execute. Because I felt like last year when they knew they couldn't pass, they really loaded the front line. And it was very difficult for Eddie Lacy to get yards. Ripkowski gets yards because they do draw plays when they're not expecting it. I agree. I guess what I come back to is just as amazing to me is that I look at the Pete Dohertys or the Jason Wildes and you guys that cover the team seem to have a better sense of how this team is, the pulse is, how to win, how to sort of strategize better than the coaches on the team. I don't understand that. Even for us, I feel like we're saying, you know, do something different. They finally do, and it starts to work. So that's something that I'm encouraged about, that maybe this lunk-headed coach of ours is finally starting to change. And I guess in his career, I thought he was able to change one time, and that was in 2010, when JerMichael Finley went down.
Right. Yep.
He figured
and then they
out.
They had to go with the wide receivers instead of the tight end.
Yeah, and they had a talented group of wide receivers, and it worked. So I felt he was able to adjust there. I felt at times that Dom Capers have been creative with, you know, rushing one lineman and like seven linebackers, yeah, and sort of, but then they've kind of gotten away from that. It seems that injuries paralyze this coaching staff. You know, we got corners that can't cover, therefore we're gonna just play zone and kind of back off and let them get first down after first down, see if we can stop them to field goals. I don't like that. If we're gonna lose, let's lose with our best foot forward. And I think our best foot forward is to be super aggressive on defense, although we get some guys back. But I think it's the new offensive scheme. I think it's the fact that we have two or three receivers who are hybrid running back wide receivers. That's hard for teams to handle.
Well, on the offensive side of the ball, though, Dave, I don't think they were paralyzed by injuries. I think the change we've seen has been in response to injuries. Now, on defense, you know, there might be something to what you're saying, that they become very cautious because they don't have their guys, and so they don't take as many chances on defense. So I can't make a blanket statement that the entire coaching staff is paralyzed by injuries. It seems to be more on one side of the ball than the other. Although, having said that, I did notice a couple of plays where they were playing with two down linemen. I mean, they were trying to mix things up. They had six defensive backs. You know, they were playing some dime coverage. I mean, they were trying some personnel things. But when it came down to putting pressure, and I think this is what you're talking about, when it came time to put pressure on the passer, it was generally four guys. Now, maybe it wasn't four linemen. You know, it might have been, you know, two linebackers and two down linemen or some combination thereof. But that, if that's conservative, then that's what they were doing. They were being conservative. They were changing up the looks. But when it came to guys actually, you know, rushing, there was just, you know, four guys, I think, pretty much all of the time. I didn't see the percentage breakdowns, but boy, it sure to me didn't look like they were doing much blitzing. It was mostly four guys, although you didn't know which four guys were going to be coming.
Maybe. And I'm sure that they, you know, are trying to not get let them score quickly, but that's my point, is why would you worry about that? You know, go for it a little bit, knowing that at that point in the game, with 2.5 minutes left, that someone should say, I've experienced this whole game. The way we're going to win at this point is probably our offense having the ball and with enough time to move down and kick a field goal. Because a touchdown only puts them up by a point. A two-point conversion puts them up by 2 points. All we got to do is come back with a field goal. We can do that. So let's go with option A, stop them on defense, and then option B will be the offense. But we were lucky to get the ball with 30 seconds on the clock. You know, they scored there. I guess the pass over the middle was 11 yards. So I guess that's not super long, but they could have ground that out for a few more plays and we could have gotten the ball with 5 seconds left. And then that would have been completely pointless. But
well, actually, that's when they're best, because that's when they can throw the Hail Mary in the end zone.
That's true. Yeah, that's
hey,
true.
As long as you're talking about this, this might be a good place to talk about the McGinn post-game article in which he used it to beat Aaron Rodgers about the head and shoulders, basically laying the loss on him. And if people haven't read the article, go back and take a look at it. McGinn focuses his article, and granted, he's writing on deadline, and the game has gone late, and he's got to, you know, come up with something quickly. But he basically said that the game, the only part of the game that, you know, really was important was those last 31 seconds, and the Packers failed, or specifically Aaron Rodgers failed. And he goes on to point how Rodgers is 106 and comeback, you know, fourth quarter victories. Never mind the fact, of course, that Rodgers led him on an 8.5 minute drive to take the lead by 6 points with 4 minutes to go, and the defense, you know, didn't hold up its side of the bargain. But still, you know, McGinn lays it off onto Rodgers. The thing I wanted to say, I'd like to know your comments about that, but I just wanted to note that I listened to the McGinn and Cohen podcast. Michael Cohen does a podcast every week with Bob McGinn, and it's not bad. I mean, it's not a bad podcast. I listen to it just about every week.
It takes about 30 minutes to get into the talk about football, the ones I've listened to.
Well, okay, that's hyperbole. I would say it probably takes 5 minutes. But yes, they talk about some old moldy record. This week it was the Moody Blues and how, you know, he had gone to see them recently. McGinn had gone to see them, and they're all in their 70s now, and they played for an hour and 35. Okay, luckily we don't do that with our podcast, but that's what they do.
We do at the end.
Yeah, exactly. We wait until the end so people can hear the football stuff, and then if they want to, you know, kill it at the end, they can.
Yeah.
But what they did at the end of their podcast this week, and I didn't time it exactly, but I would estimate it was probably about 10 minutes – when they didn't, you know, address it head on, but they must have gotten, or McGinn must have gotten, just a pile of shit about about what he wrote, because they went through that last series of downs, and Michael Cohen, who is basically like, you know, you remember the cartoon with the big dog Spike and the little dog, and
yeah,
the little dog would run around Spike, oh, Spike, you're the greatest, Spike, you're the greatest. Well, this is basically what Michael Cohen was doing. He was the little dog running around Spike, and how he had looked at the All-22, and on second down, you know, the All-22 showed that everybody was open, and the guy who was least open was Jordy Nelson, and that's where the pass went, and, you know, and so he was trying, essentially, without saying so, to say how right Big Spike was about, you know, his evisceration of Aaron Rodgers. And then after he went on with that, then McGinn chimes in talking about, you know, this is where the game was decided. And then, Cohen says, oh, that's exactly right. You know, they taught me in journalism school that when you're writing a game story about the home team, the whole point of the story is at what point did they win or lose. And in this game, they won or lost on that final drive. And that's really all that matters, because that's where the game was won or lost. Never mind about Aaron Rodgers, the previous drive, 125 passer rating. None of that's important. All that mattered was the last 31 seconds. And so they took all this time essentially apologizing and explaining why they did what they did in laborious detail. Dave, it was hilarious to see these guys backpedaling and trying to defend themselves, or actually McGinn using his little dog, you know, Michael Cohen, trying to explain why this was the right thing to do and how they were right in doing it this way, and this is a big boys league and it's all that matters. You know, all that matters is what happened there at the very end. That's all it is. I mean, hey, come on. You know, maybe say I've had a couple days to think about this, and, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way to focus the story, but it was the thing that happened that I thought people would be talking about the next day. You know, the facts are the facts in terms of his comeback. But maybe if I had a little more time to write it, I would have had a broader perspective on the game. But working on deadline, this is what I had to do. No, instead, he dug in, doubled down in the proud tradition of President Donald Trump, and, you know, made this into kind of an embarrassing scenario of somebody that doesn't want to be a little bit reflective about what essentially was a takedown of Aaron Rodgers.
All right. So, first of all, you're right. For some reason, Bob McGinn seems to have an axe to grind against McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers, and the Packers generally. And I think it's in the past, I think he's had more access to the coach. Coach have been maybe talk to him more, and now it seems like the front office, what we hear from him is, and I guess from others, that they're pretty closed off. They don't talk about injuries. They're not very forthcoming. You know, Ted is completely, you know, unemotional. So I think they're harder to cover for him, and I think he's gotten more and more angry at the Packer organization as he's been writing.
Great observation, Dave. That is such a terrific observation. I totally agree that he is frustrated with having lack of access. He used to have a ton of sources in previous administrations. He's got none of that now. And I think a lot of his bile comes out in the stuff that he writes. I think that's a great observation.
Yeah, I mean, right away he just kind of blasts into them, and it's McCarthy-Rodgers era of how they've not succeeded in end of games. Now, having said that, the reality is what it is. He does use statistics. He talks about the amount of comebacks that Aaron Rodgers has had. And you're right, that could have been a comeback that he brought by having them score, you know, at the 8-minute mark or early in the game, and if the Packers would have stopped him on defense. Then maybe you call that certainly a great game by Aaron Rodgers, and maybe you call it even a comeback. But, you know, there are games where the defense bails you out. There are times when defenses don't bail you out. I mean, you've got to kind of perform when you're called upon. And so if you define that as those comeback wins, I forget the number exactly, but Rodgers, despite all his success and the number of years he's played, have like 6 or 7 less games than even like Russell Wilson, who has played far fewer seasons. Right. Not to mention Matt Ryan and, you know, forget about Brady and those kind of guys.
There's a long list of guys. I think in McGinn's article, I think he said he's 106th on one list. I guess it depends on how you count it, and like 94th on another list. And I think it must be an all-time list. But the guys that he's, you know, in the general vicinity of are, you know, second and third tier quarterbacks.
Yeah. And so you have to stop and ask yourself, what is wrong with the Packers offense at the end of games? And that's happened against Atlanta, and it happens. I can't think of off the top of my head, but it's happened more than a few times where end of the game, like, let's go, and it's not even sort of a drop in the end zone. It's like 3 and out. You know, it's a complete lack of execution right away. And you look at this series of play, the first one, they got 7 yards on the first play.
Right. Yeah.
20 seconds left, and then he throws deep to Nelson. Now, if Nelson catches that ball, and if he were the Jordy Nelson of 2 years ago, maybe he catches it, and we think everything's great. Because that was pretty far down the field. That might have been enough to
that's
get.
Like, that's like it's like 20 yards, right?
Yeah. So they would have if you know that would have been then across midfield. They probably need another couple passes.
Right, but it would have been first down, which would have been nice, and they would have had two timeouts. They had to call a timeout because Nelson hurt himself on that play.
That's right. Yeah, and I want to come back to Nelson too. But the next
so
two,
do I.
next two throws were bad. You know, the next one, Allison was behind him and it almost got intercepted. And then what happens
on fourth down,
all the time on fourth down, it's like a miscommunication. It just falls and nothing. And, you know, if that's our defense, it feels like they move down the field. You know, if that were Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons, that would have been a different outcome, or at least could have got a couple first downs. The defense is almost set up to give you a couple first downs. So they're not executing at the end of the games. And I know I'm frustrated. I don't have the stats in my head to pull it out, but when McGinn points it out, I think, yeah, that backs up the way I feel. I feel like they fail at the end of the games on offense a lot, and it's a Rodgers.
I think that's right, yeah. But you know what? My rendering of that, and you know, you can let me know what you think of this. I think what makes them good in the first 3.75 quarters is that they don't make mistakes, that, you know, they throw the ball away when they have to. They don't take unnecessary risks. They don't turn the ball, you know, I mean, those kind of things. But that kind of play doesn't lend itself to the end of games as well. And you look at Brett Favre, you know, I mean, the guy threw a ton of interceptions. We all know that. But that style of play is so much more conducive to, you know, taken those chances at the end of games. I think that's why he was so good at the end of games, because his style of play was just a looser, more risky style that when the time is running down, you know, he was the kind of guy you want to have. Aaron Rodgers, though, is careful. You know, he's very few interceptions. He doesn't like to turn the ball over. But you don't have time at the end of games to be that careful. So he's required at the end of games to be a different kind of quarterback than he is. Favre at the end of games could be the kind of quarterback that he wanted to be. Sometimes they ended in backbreaking interceptions late in the game. But sometimes, very often, in fact, we had those remarkable, incredible last second, you know, last ditch wins, because that's the kind of guy he was. It reflects their personalities. Now, that's just my own working theory. I don't know if you see it that way, but I kind of think that's why the stats are the way they are, is because the Packers have a quarterback that is great in those first, you know, 3.75 quarters, but that skill set that makes him great just does not translate to those late game situations.
I don't know. I guess in order to agree with you, and I have to say that late game comebacks are highly a result or highly correlated to recklessness. And I don't see that all the time. When I think of the great quarterbacks, Elway, who has, I don't know, like a million comebacks, Montana, or even just Matt Ryan in the series right before ours, I didn't feel like he was putting balls up for grabs. It was a systematic down the field, hitting guys that were open, get out of bounds, and march down the field, and bam, guys open, and you hit them.
Well, but those guys, though, were willing to take risks earlier in games. Rodgers doesn't take as many risks, period. And those guys, as great as they were, I mean, you can look at the stats. I mean, they weren't interception machines like Brett Favre, but they threw a lot more interceptions than Aaron Rodgers does. So they were more willing to take risks just because that's their nature. Aaron Rodgers doesn't like to take risks.
I don't know. I'm not agreeing with you on this. I mean, the pass to Jordy Nelson was not a safe throw. That was into coverage. The one to Allison was into coverage. You know, he was wide open and played. It's not like they're throwing two-yard passes and they don't get the first down. He's either throwing poorly, picking the wrong guy, or there's a miscommunication. Miscommunication happens a lot. And maybe that's more of a function of the offense where they're, again, these isolation, you're supposed to do one thing, he throws it because the guy chose to do something else. But whatever it is, it happens a lot. It is super frustrating, but at least they scored 32 points. And, you know, the hope is 32 points should get you a 32-27 win, because the defense should play a little bit better when they're healthy, and maybe we can beat teams like Atlanta. I mean, we lost to Atlanta away, we lost to Minnesota away, and we lost to Dallas, who might be the best team at home. So we got, and we have two winnable games coming up. We could end up being 6-3, and hopefully getting guys healthy again. I think that's why people feel optimistic, but there's something about Rodgers, McCarthy, the combination of what they do, there is a high failure rate when you need a clutch player. I think McGinn is right about that. We need to take a break. Can we take a break and come back?
I think this would be an excellent time to take a break. It's Chris and Dave on Packers Therapy, and we are breaking down and talking about the Packers' narrow one-point loss to the Atlanta Falcons last Sunday. We got a couple more things we want to talk about in relation to this game, and then we're going to look ahead to the next game, going to do some betting lines, some pop culture. We are going to do all of that after we take a break to recalibrate our machinery, and then we are going to be back with more Packers Therapy. As promised, it's more Packers Therapy. It's more Chris and Dave. And before the break, Dave, we were talking a bit about Jordy Nelson. We touched on that. You said you want to talk a bit about him, and I did too. I thought in the first half, Jordy looked like Jordy Nelson. I mean, there's one long reception. He looked good. He, you know, made some plays. He moved around well. But in the second half, you know, he looked kind of old and used up. And we talked a second ago about the play on second down, I believe that was, on that final drive inside of 30 seconds, in which, you know, he went up in traffic and lost a battle against the defender. Then he fell down and hurt his hand, and you know, he had to leave the game. It cost him a timeout, as a matter of fact. I don't know if this is just kind of part of the evolution of a guy working his way back from a, you know, significant injury, an ACL tear, or if, you know, this is just the way it's going to be for Jordy Nelson. If he's, you know, not going to be kind of a number one, number two kind of receiver, but, you know, maybe they're going to, a little bit like Peppers, you know, you kind of get what you can out of him in spots, but otherwise he's, you know, he's not going to be a factor. I don't know how you're reading that or how you're looking at it, but at this point, seven games in, you know, Jordy Nelson doesn't look, you know, like the guy that he was.
No. Now, the way I watched the game, as I mentioned, I was at the airport landing, and I stopped at a restaurant to watch the game when it was 24-19 when I started watching. And from that point on, Jordy Nelson looked terrible, and I tweeted out that I thought one of the stories of this game was how old and stiff Jordy Nelson feels. I felt like he was on the ground for most of the game, you know, falling down. Yeah. And
he tripped on that last drive on the fourth down, right? He was stepped on or something, and he stumbled and he took himself entirely out of that fourth down play, and that's just, you know, that's what you associate with older players, you know, kind of stumbling around, and that's the way he looked. It's too bad you didn't see the first half in real time, because he did look good. He looked really, really dynamic and really like his old self. But the second half, I mean, it was hard to watch.
Yeah. And so I did watch it on the rewind and saw, you know, the long pass. He had a 58-yard pass, which looked pretty good. And again, it was against zone coverage, which I was surprised with. But I don't think he's a guy that you need to put on the shelf. But, you know, clearly he is like the Sterling Sharp to Brett Favre. He's the guy that Rodgers trusts and wants to go to. But I don't think you can trust him the same way that you used to a couple of years ago. Like that second down play, that's a ball that probably Jordy catches when he's younger.
That's a play even in 2014, I mean, that's a play he wins.
Right. And you go like, thank goodness for Jordy, right? Yeah.
I don't care if it's high and behind him. I mean, that's a play Jordy has traditionally won, and other receivers that Rodgers has had, he's been able to throw that ball just where he did, and James Jones would come down with it, you know, or Jordy Nelson. And he didn't do it, and that was kind of odd, because you could always count on Jordy, you know, kind of the Jordy Nelson between, you know, 2011 and 2014. He was going to make that play, and he didn't. And is that the way it's going to be from here on out? Or is he just working his way back and he'll resemble himself more consistently in the future? Hard to say, but it's not a pleasant thought.
No, it's not. I think there's a few things you can do about it, though. One is you have to de-emphasize him in the offense, which is happening naturally. He caught four passes to Davante Adams, 12, and actually Jeff Janis caught just as many. He caught four passes. Yeah. So I think he has to take that Larry Fitzgerald role where he's he's your slot receiver because he's bigger and can run a little bit. And if you can get him kind of cutting across the middle, he's more open to injury, unfortunately. But I think that's how you're going to have to play him more. And that's what they've done with Larry Fitzgerald. And I think he's for Arizona, and I think he's been fairly successful. But maybe next year with more rehab and off season, he can get some strength back, and you know, maybe psychologically he feels better. He can kind of come back a bit. But I think his role needs to be de-emphasized. And the other thing that feels good too is I'm looking at their receivers, and between Nelson, hopefully Cobb comes back. Adams has had a very strong game. He has become someone, and hopefully that confidence. I know you don't like the psychological part of the game, but I think if Adams can kind of take this and become a man, you know, at his position, then maybe he can be closer to the number one, and then you've got Cobb Nelson as kind of your 2-3. But you've got three guys behind them in Janice, Davis, and Allison, which are really interesting players, right? They're two of them are really fast. One guy is really tall. Probably, I think he's fairly fast too. They could create a lot of matchup problems for teams, given you know Rodgers. If he can start playing like the Rodgers of old a little bit, you know, this team receiving wise could be pretty dynamic. But if you're going to throw, I mean, they threw 9 times to Jordy Nelson and he caught 4 of them. If you could spread out, if he can be 4 out of 5 or 4 out of 6 and get 3 more passes to some of the younger guys, maybe, you know, that's a few more first downs, a few more points. So I think the time is now that you say, Jordy, we're going to step you back a little bit. And it's time to get these other guys involved and, you know, trust him or not, because, hey, Jordy might be where he's supposed to be, but he's covered and he's not outrunning guys like he used to.
You know, I thought that Trevor Davis, I thought played really well in this game. And I've got a thing in my head because the game we saw, the game that our, you know, generous listeners sent us to against Detroit, you know, he had a couple of targets. One of them, you know, wide open and hits him in the hands and he drops it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of an initial.
He's in the doghouse there, right?
Well, yeah, exactly right. And so in my mind, it's like he's always that guy. And this game, though, he began to kind of turn that around. And it wasn't just the fact that he was looking like he might be a threat from scrimmage. He had a really nice 55-yard punt return that, you know, was critical. And that's an element that he brings, you know, that. You know, other guys don't. I mean, I guess Micah Hyde has done a little bit of that, but you know, Davis, I think, is a guy that really brings a lot in the return game. Besides, then it's a bonus almost to have him doing something from scrimmage as well. So with those guys, you know, Allison catches a touchdown pass, Janice caught a touchdown pass. You know, it's starting to look a little bit like they might have some other alternatives. You almost wonder. If getting rid of Jarrett Abadaris maybe, you know, gave those guys a little bit of confidence, you know, because they were able to kind of remove somebody who was a competitor, you know, and it sort of clarifies things a little bit. And Rodgers, I don't know, out of necessity or what, but all of this talk of, well, he doesn't trust so-and-so, well, it didn't really matter. I mean, those were the guys he had to throw to. With Cobb and Montgomery on the sidelines, so okay, he's going to throw to him, and he did. And I thought, you know, those guys gave me hope for the future, the way they played.
Yeah, I mean, the drop that Davis had against the game we saw against Detroit, that's Ted Thompson's fault. That's you keep having rookies all over your squad. It's you've got to go through growing pains with them, and the first half of the seasons are going to be tougher because they got to kind of grow into it. Now the plus side of it is if they catch on or they get some confidence and get some playing time, you could end up being a very different team by the end of the season than you are at the beginning. So I think it gives us some hope. I think by the end of this season, if we are successful, I honestly think that Janice, Davis, Allison are going to have to play more meaningful time in this offense, and as you say, less Eddie Lacy, I think. I think certainly less James Starks. If they come out against the Colts this week and feed James Starks 20 balls and he averages 2 yards a carry, I will be so frustrated with this team and with this coaching staff. That is not what they need. They have momentum. I don't care if they get James Starks back. That's not – He did not play well before he got hurt, and I can't imagine he's going to light the world on fire when he comes back after. So we'll see what they do. I guess I am somewhat encouraged, given the fact that we don't have Lacy and Nelson's not the way he was, is that we've got some other guys that may be able to step up.
Well, you know, they can maybe now do some things creatively, spread the ball around. You get 8 carries for Starks. You get 4 or 5, for Ripkowski. Maybe you're going to give it to Montgomery, 3 or 4 times. I mean, you know, they can get, 17, 18 rushes in just by having different combinations of players, in the backfield. And maybe that's the way they're going to do it. And I think that probably works better because all of those guys, are threats to catch the ball. And that is going to make that, I think, a more dynamic offense generally. So I would actually kind of welcome something like that. You know, Starks, I think, is not a great receiver, but I think he's a better receiver than Eddie Lacy. And you can do some screens with him and some draws with him. They did draws with Ripkowski. They can do that with Montgomery. Although, I wonder about Montgomery. You know, the reason he missed time is because he has sickle cell trait. And I guess there are physical ramifications of that. And I know so little about sickle cell anemia, sickle cell trait. This is exposing my whiteness. It's not something that, afflicts Caucasians very often. It's mostly, confined to African-Americans. And so I didn't know he was a sufferer of this. And he apparently had some sort of situation where he had blood in his urine, which does not sound like something you want to mess around with. Oh. And I don't know if that just clears up. And is it a career threatening kind of thing? He's a young guy, so I guess he really doesn't maybe know how this is going to affect him going forward. And I also don't know if it's significant enough where, playing the high side of caution, maybe they're going to be very careful with him and not let him run out of the backfield, because you take a lot more abuse and a lot more hits when you're carrying the ball. So I think that's a situation to monitor going forward. And also, Dave, there's a changing of the guard, pardon the pun, at center right now. Treader, late in the game, hurt his knee, and it looks like he's going to miss this game, and we're going to see a return to Corey Linsley at center. So how does that affect, what they do either running or passing the ball? We haven't seen Linsley really play in the style of offense that they're doing right now. He's a stronger guy than Treader, but he's not as nifty and nimble. And does that make them – is it more conducive to run the ball with a guy like that? And is it going to limit some of the things they want to do in the passing game? That will be interesting to see if that's going to change anything. And also, how rusty is the guy going to be? He hasn't played at all. He's been practicing for 3 weeks, but he hasn't played in 10 months. So how much is he going to give him when he comes back? That may also impact the offense in subtle ways and the plays that they call and the personnel that they put on the field.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see what Don Jackson gives you this week. I mean, they'll be at home,
Yep.
And I think, being on grass, and they might want to run a little bit more. And I'm afraid they're going to feed the ball to James Starks. Starks was, a revelation when he came on the team early. He gave them somewhat of a running threat, but now I just feel like he is such an upright runner. He fumbles the ball. He's not a great receiver out of the backfield. I would much rather. Hopefully, Ty Montgomery will be healthy. Ty Cobb, if he
Ty Cobb. I think he was a hell of a ball player.
I almost said that 3 times. I knew I was going to end up saying that Ty Cobb.
Is it the combination of Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb?
I think that is.
Because that would actually be
Ty Cobb pretty, would be excellent, right?
That would be pretty potent.
And yeah. I've got baseball in my mind after watching the Cubs yesterday. And I'd be curious to see what Don Jackson does. They got rid of Nile Davis, so his career as a Packer is quickly over. I wonder what their plans are. I really am – sometimes you can kind of get a sense what you think they're going to do. I could see them coming out and trying to run the ball with James Starks and a combination of Ripkowski and Don Jackson. Or are they going to come out and really hit this pass game and – they threw for 38 times against Atlanta. Could they throw for even more Something like what was the height? He threw over 60 against.
He had 56, 50, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was against not Detroit. Who was it?
It
was
it was the Bears. It was in the
Bears.
Against
Bears, right? You know, are they going to do something like that? Tough to know. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm nervous about it because this is a game they really need to win. If they lose to the Colts this week, I think the season is in question. Don't you agree with that?
Well, you just answered my next question. How important for the Packers is this game against the Colts?
Yeah.
And even as we stand right now at 4-3 after seven games, you know, you're going to have to go, you know, the people who were predicting, you know, 13-3, they got to run the table. That's not going to happen, but you got to win at least six games to even have, you know, a look at the playoffs. I mean, there are 10 win teams that miss the postseason. So you got to go 6-3 down the stretch. And that does kind of make this game, which should be a winnable game at home, it kind of makes it a must win. You know, not that they, you know, couldn't, you know, come back from 4-4 and still make the postseason. But as we, you know, as we hit the halfway point in the season, you got to start making sure you win games you should win. And Indy's got a good quarterback, but they do have issues. They are a flawed team, and you are playing at home. So I really do think you're right, Dave. I think this is a must win, and I haven't really heard a lot of that kind of talk either on podcasts or reading things. I think this is a really important game in the Packers' season. Now, it's a non-conference opponent. Maybe that makes it more important in some ways because they've already lost, what, three times to conference teams? And when playoff time comes around, that could be a huge tiebreaker against them. So, you know, you're going to have to hope that you have enough wins that you're not in a tie-break elimination kind of situation. And that means you have to beat teams like Indy at home this week. So I'm gonna have to agree with you on this one, Dave.
Yeah, I saw the coach for the Colts say that for them, this is a must-win for them, that this is kind of a statement game. And I remember thinking, oh, crap, why does this have to be a statement game for them? But it's just as much that way for the Packers. So I don't think anyone has an advantage of their a backs-to-the-wall situation. And the Colts, I'm looking at the team defenses and where they're ranked. They're ranked 29th. So they give up a lot of yards. We should be able to score. I feel like we lose games when our offense doesn't click. It feels like the whole mojo of the team just collapses on itself. And this is a team where our offense should move. It sounds like we're going to get Clay Matthews back, get more pressure.
Yep.
And, you know, we're playing at home. So this could be a game that could make us feel good. I'd love to win this game and also feel like the offense came from lots of different players. You know, even if Starks comes back, a little bit of that, a little bit of running game. Don Jackson gave you something. You know, we have five or six receivers with three or four catches apiece. Maybe some longer plays. You know, that Aaron Rodgers is another quarterback rating. Then I think that gives you some momentum to go into Tennessee, which is a road game, but that's a winnable game as well. And now you're 6-3.
Should be, yeah.
So,
yeah, you know, it's not going to be easy. You know, Meach Goodson apparently is going to miss the game, has a concussion, but they might get Rollins back. You know, Gunter was hurt a little bit in the last game. I'm not sure if he's going to be available. They will have problems in the defensive backfield. And last time, I think one of the reasons why they didn't rush for a lot of the games, why they only were trying to get pressure with four, is they wanted to drop more linebackers in coverage to help out a suspect secondary. Now, are they going to? I don't think they'll do that with Matthews. I'm not sure they'll drop him back in coverage. But you are, you know, you're facing a good quarterback who's having a really nice season. The secondary for the Packers is banged up. They're going to have to rely on some people who haven't been stepping up. To step up, and even if Rollins plays, you know, he hasn't played in quite a few weeks. Will he be ready, you know, to face a quarterback the caliber of Andrew Luck? I don't know. This could be another high-scoring game, and I don't know if this is one of the proposition bets coming up. But if we are going to use that one as a prop bet, I'm thinking this is going to be a high-scoring game.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that. Should we go through the betting lines?
Let's go to the betting lines, and then we can run through the email after that. So as long as we've opened up the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, as we do every week, we play a little game that allows – it's a friendly game. The winner gets a stay in the presidential suite of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino with we're opening up a new one. Did you know that, Dave? We're opening up one in Reno now, too. So we are in Vegas. We've opened Laughlin last year. We're going to open in Reno in 2017. But we continue to use – we favor the Vegas site. So right there on the Strip in Vegas, Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. One of our letters this week, too, by the way, is a comment from our friend Tom in California. We'll get to that later on. So last week we played the lines like we always do, and I think our man Mitno Miller sent us a spreadsheet. Is that right?
Yep, we got a spreadsheet. So I have the results, and we have a clear winner. So the casino hotel room will be occupied by one person. But let me go through the results, and we'll tell at the end. So the first one was how many pass attempts from Rodgers. We thought that was going to be a big number again, like it was against the Bears. You said 48.5, and it was the under. I said the over. It was the under. He threw for 38 times, so meaningfully less.
That surprised me. Yeah. I mean, I really thought at the minimum, I thought they'd be over 40.
Yeah. Part of it, they had longer pass plays, so they scored quicker.
Right.
And then, Atlanta had the ball. When they drove, they held the ball for a while.
So
they just didn't
have as
much time. Right. Number two, how many catches would Devontae Adams have? He had a lot of catches against the Bears. You said 8.5. I said the under. It was the over.
Yeah, considerably,
catches,
right? Yeah,
12
right,
catches, yeah. That's something certainly to pay attention to. Matt Ryan, quarterback rating. You set the line at 100. I said the over, and he had 129.5.
Yeah, so, he had a terrific game. He really did.
Do you feel different about Matty Ice after that game?
I do a little bit. You know, he looked very – and also don't forget Julio Jones, who we were worried about last week, and all Packer fans were – you know, he wasn't much of a factor. It kind of hurt his ankle, I think, in the first half. That may have been a factor why he, you know, wasn't as good. I think Gunter played him well. So his number one threat is taken away, and, you know, he still looked good. Now, I know the Packers were limited on defense. That maybe helped out. But he had a very solid game. So, yeah, I was impressed, and he ran the four-minute offense. He got him in the end zone. Yeah, you know, Matty Ice looked good.
You know, there is one play, though, that all this conversation would be different is Gunter had a Tremont Williams-like interception opportunity.
Where absolutely.
He could have jumped the route, caught it,
pick
and gone,
six. Yep,
yes,
yep.
And dropped
and he,
it.
And he couldn't. I know. If it's ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. But this is one of those situations that would have been great, because it would have been such a nice bookend to what happened in the postseason of 2010. Wasn't to be, though. But still, Matty Ice. Give, you know, credit where credit's due.
Yeah. Maybe if Gunter wasn't such a young player, maybe he had a more experienced player, he could have caught that ball. And but, you know, that's Ted Thompson's call. Number four is Julio Jones' reception yards. You set the line at 135.
Oh!
Not only is that high, but I said the over.
Oh!
And he only had 29 receiving yards. If we'd have known it was 29 yards, I think we both would have thought that they would have won this game.
Absolutely.
Number five is how many interceptions would Green Bay have? I thought they needed to have one, and they did. They needed that one by Gunter. You set the line at 1.5. I thought they would get at least one, and the under was correct. They had none. Number six, another, which is something I really am paying attention to, is how many catches did any of our tight ends have? You set the line at 2.5. Recall how many catches by tight ends we had this game?
I don't think there were any.
Zero. Absolutely zero. So I don't think that is good. Another is how many total yards, number seven, did Niall Davis have, not including kickoffs? You said 55 yards. I put the under, and that was correct. He had 8 and is no longer on the team.
Yeah, so we won't ask that question again.
7.5. Was will they mention Favre during the broadcast? Mike said they did not. I thought that they would. And then we had the over-under was the reception yards for Julio Jones. Everyone put there's a pretty good spread. The lowest, someone said 44.
Oh, nice.
That's a very –
Who did that?
Let's see. Brian Thompson.
Nice job, Brian.
Brian
well
Thompson
done.
Put 44. He's the closest. The highest was, where is that one? 199 by Greg Carson.
Oh, boy.
But it was 29 yards, as we said. The winner is Richard Durain. When it rains in the plain in Spain, he had 7 out of those 7.5 calls. So clear winner at 7. He was there's one with 6, but he was the clear winner. So that is your betting lines. Are you ready for this week's, Chris?
I am just about, but before we do that, we should tell people that if you want to play the betting lines with us, we would love you to do that. All you have to do, listen up. Dave's going to do about 7 over-unders here. I'm going to set the lines. You play over-under, and then you send your guesses, predictions, thoughts, feelings, if you know the hair in the back of your neck is standing up and you got to play with us. You send it to mitnomiller@gmail.com. That's our guy, Mike. It's M-I-T-N-O Miller at gmail.com. All right, so now we're going to set the lines, and you can play over-under with us and get in touch with Mike, and maybe you win yourself a fabulous week in the Packers Therapy Hotel, a casino presidential suite.
Yes. All right, number one, against the Colts, how many total yards, so it, maybe it's reverse, or but probably mostly receiving yards, will Trevor Davis have this week?
That's a great question because he had, you know, and kind of an emergence, I think. Now, my only question on him is he going to be – because he hasn't really developed an NFL physique at this point. I mean, he looks considerably smaller. He almost looks like he's a high schooler out there with the varsity guys, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure he's ready to play on D.D. Grassmaster. he was on field turf last week, and I think that might be more of his surface. Now, when you say totally, are you counting his return yards? Because he does return kicks and punts.
No, yeah, not including kickoffs.
These are yards from scrimmage, which would include if they did like an end around or something like that, right?
Yeah, right, right.
And I'm thinking they're going to do that. And I don't know if it's this week, and maybe this could be our tiebreaker, yes or no. Will they do an end around this week?
Jet sweep?
Yeah. That it's something where a receiver, regardless if it is a jet sweep or an end around, whatever it is, carries the ball. I think they're going to do it this week. It won't be wildly successful, but, you know, they'll get like 8 to 11 yards, something like that. I think he's going to catch a couple of balls. I think they might try him deep. I don't think he's going to connect. It'll be like the game that we saw where it was like a 60-yard, you know, play. It was incomplete, but passing interference, so that works.
Yeah.
So I'm going to set his yardage for the week at 42.
42. I'm taking the over. I think you can get that in one shot. I'm going to take the over.
It's very possible because he's the fastest guy on the team, I think.
Yeah.
And I think they will try to get him long. I don't think they'll connect, but I think they might. His function might be to get them thinking, uh-oh, we can't, you know, we got to play off this guy, and that might open up things underneath.
You know, a jet sweep play with Eddie Lacy in the backfield where that linebacker's got to, you know, kind of commit, and you know, when Eddie Lacy's in the game and they're all just like bunched toward that middle and you get a jet sweep in there, that would be a really effective play. But of course that's not in the current playbook, so they probably won't try it. And Eddie Lacy's not playing anyway, but something for the future.
Exactly.
Number two, how many rushing yards will Green Bay have, not including Aaron Rodgers, who was their leading rusher last week?
Yeah, he had 60 yards, so you take him out of the – what would they have if you take him out of the equation last week?
48.
48 would have been the number. They will have James Starks back, and he's, you know, even though he's not been great, I think he's lost something, and I think he's in his final year with the club, but he is a legitimate running back. You know, he's got a Super Bowl ring, Dave. I thought I'd point that out to you.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true. I don't think we'll do a lot better this week with that, but I think they will do better. So I'm going to put the non-Aaron Rodgers rushing yardage for the Packers at 61.
61 yards. I'm going to take the over. I think I didn't check to see how the Colts offense or defense is against the run, but I just got a feeling they're going to try and run the ball more. Number three, what will Andrew Luck's passer rating be? Similar to Matt Ryan, who apparently tonight won 43 to 28, and they call him an MVP candidate on my update on my phone. So that's your Matty Ice. But Andrew Luck, what do you think his passer rating will be?
Andy Luck is having a good season, as I recall. I don't know what his season passer rating is, but I know he's been playing well. I think it's over 100, if I'm not mistaken, for the season. So against the Packer defense, that is chaos in the secondary. I'm going to put his passer rating for this game, I'm going to set it at 107.
107. All right. I'm going to take the under. I just don't have a really good reason why, but I'm going to take the under. Number four, I wrote this down before I realized I did this last week, but I'm still curious. How many tight end receptions do you think we'll get this week?
Boy. Well, I guess 2.5 last week was the line, right? I think that's what I put it out there.
Yeah, you going to do it again?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to do that because I heard that Cook is practicing again this week. I don't think he'll play this week. I think he'll play the following week. I think he's working his way back from that high ankle sprain. So it's going to be Perillo again, and it's going to be Richard Rodgers again. Maybe Oscar Hammerstein will be there with him. I guess, you know, I think I am. I think I'm going to stick with 2.5 because I don't think Cook will play. If Cook was playing, I might bump it up to, 4.5, but I'm going to keep it at 2.5.
All right, I'm going to take the under this time. What did I do last time? I took the over.
You must
take the under.
Okay, all right.
All right, number five, how many rushing yards will we get from the running back only known as Aaron Rodgers?
Well, he had 60 this past week and 6 carries. I think teams will realize that, that is a threat, and I don't know if they'll spy him or what they'll do, but those were some big first downs that he picked up running. I don't think he'll get 60 again this week, but I will think he will get – I'm going to put it down at 32.
32. All right. I'm going to take the over. I was going to say in the 40s. I think he'll get a few first downs. Number six, how many sacks do you think Green Bay will have against Luck or whoever plays quarterback? Last week they had 2 sacks.
And on consecutive plays.
Peppers and Mike Daniels.
Mike Daniels, right.
Hopefully Clay Matthews is back. How many sacks do you think that will increase that? Because I think he is having a good season, Andrew Luck, but he's hit a lot, right?
He's not very mobile.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think with Matthews back, and if he's anything like himself, they'll have a little better pass rush. But I think they're going to be cautious again, Dave. I think they're very concerned about their deficiencies in the secondary. And so I think they'll put more pressure on, but it won't be such that they're going to be getting, 6 or 7. So I'm going to put that number – they had 2 last week. I think they're going to do better than that this week. I'm going to put it at – let's put it at 2.5.
2.5. 2.5, I'm going to take the over. I think they get 3. Number 7, total reception, total catches by the combination of Janice, Davis, and Allison.
Ah, yes. That famous law firm, Janice, Davis, and Allison. By the way, did you see the Twitter stream from Geronimo Allison?
I heard about it, but it was a profane thing that he did early in his career or something?
Yeah, I think he was in college, I think. Like, these went back to like 2012, and it is some heavy street it's available, you just have to Google Geronimo Allison, Twitter feed. And there is some rather raw material there. So yikes, children. So anyway, yes, you can check that out. But the three of them combined. And you want number of receptions or yardage, do you say? I'm sorry.
Receptions.
Number of receptions for the three of them combined. I'm going to set that at 8.5.
Eight and a half. I tried to search for his tweets and it started a video. I'm going to take the under on that one.
So you don't
because
think
well
that,
it depends. It's
we'll get 3 catches each.
Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb. What are they going to? Are they back?
I'm not sure about Randall Cobb. I think they're expecting Montgomery, but I have not inspected his urine, Dave, to see if there's any blood in it. So,
I'm going to take the under. What about Ty Cobb? Ty Cobb catch any?
Ty Cobb, I think he caught some spikes to the face, I think.
All right.
Famous for.
All right, 7.5 because I snuck one in. Who do you think the leading rusher? This is just an answer, Mike, but who will be the leading rusher for the Packers?
I guess is this like a tiebreak?
Yeah. I'm curious your thought, that is a question.
My thought, the leading rusher, and you mean yardage here,
yes,
I assume.
Yes, correct.
I think the leading rusher will be James Starks.
You think it'll be Starks. All right, I'm going with Don Jackson. I'm going to say John Jackson gets some time and breaks one. 7.75 quarters, because you threw one in here. Will the Packers run a jet sweep or reverse in the game? Yes or no?
I'm saying yes. I think this is the week they dust off that, and I'm expecting it's going to be Trevor Davis running it.
All right, I'm going to say no, and then the tiebreaker is the total score. Chris, do you want to take a guess at the total score?
Yeah, I am going to, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think we're going to be between the two teams in the 60s, and I'm going to say 62.
All right, I'm going to say 61. Just to be one under you. I think the defense will play a little bit better at home, juiced up, and with Matthews back. So I think I'm going to be 61 and under against your 62 and over. We'll see who wins that one. But that's the tiebreaker. Send in your votes to mittenomiller@gmail.com, please.
Yes. We like it when you – I mean, we had what? Do we have a dozen people this week? We've had a lot of really good response. People really enjoy this. I think we stopped doing it for a while. And, you know, people, hey, where are the betting lines go? So back by popular demand, we're glad you enjoy it. We're happy to do it. Gives us a chance, too, to kind of talk about the upcoming game and what we expect to see. And as long as we're thinking about that, I think we agree the Packers need to win this one, but are you seeing a Packer victory or
I am.
Not?
Yeah, no. I am. I'm looking forward to this game. I think you're going to come out at home. It's a Sunday. Is it a noon game, right? So the sun will be out, hopefully.
The weather in Wisconsin for the first week in November been really nice. It's been in the kind of the mid to upper 50s, some low 60s even. I'm not sure if it'll be carrying into the weekend, but for tomorrow, Friday, is still supposed to be nice, and maybe Saturday. So it is really beautiful fall weather, and that should be conducive to offense, I think.
Yeah, it shows here 65 and sunny on Green Bay. It just feels like that's going to be a game they're going to win. So I think they're going to win. I think we're going to feel good about the game, Chris. I think we'll talk maybe a little bit about the defense that we're concerned about, but I think the offense is going to carry the day. And I hope that's a building block. And then, you know, if they come out and start to show some dominance on offense, there's a lot of parallels to 2010, even to this game against Atlanta, where we score. Isn't that the game in 2010? We hit this great pass to Jordy Nelson in the end zone, only to have the Falcons come back and win the game at the end. That wasn't that
exactly. Exactly right. It was Rodgers rolling left and then throwing back, and they got Nelson in the end zone. If you recall, there was a good return on the ensuing kickoff, and Matty Ice drove them like 14 yards for a field goal.
Yeah, and that drove us crazy, but then only to play them again in the playoffs, and we smoked them.
Yeah, right.
So, let's see. I did like this team a lot when they started, but when I saw their offense look a lot like last year, was so frustrating. I think they have a chance, maybe by necessity rather than genius, but maybe they'll find a chance to jumpstart this offense and find something. So we will see. I'm not ready to give up on this year yet.
Well, you know, I agree. I think they're going to win, but I'm not as certain about it. I'm really starting to think that this is going to be a team that is going to win more than it loses. It'll win probably 10 games like I thought, but I'm not certain, given the fact that they've lost already three times against conference teams, they might win 10 games, miss the playoffs on tiebreak. I'm kind of getting a bad feeling about that sort of thing, but wait and see. This is an important game. I think they will win. I don't think they're going to, blow them off the field or anything. I don't think their defense is good enough for that. But I'm expecting a win. And if not, there's going to be some trouble in River City, I think.
I agree. Now, Minnesota, I think one of the things our best chance is to catch Minnesota. They play at home against Detroit, who is 4-4 and not an easy out.
Yeah, I was surprised, because when we saw them, they played well in the second half against the Packers. But they didn't look like a team that was going to be anything to contend with, but that's all changed now.
Yeah, and Minnesota really looked awful on offense.
Yeah,
and,
terrible.
You know, they're psychologically, they're on the downswing. So, you know, if they lose that game, we win. We are tied on record, and we still get the chance to play them at home. So there's a – you talk about, you know, not making the playoffs with those amount of victories. I don't know if we can't win our division with 10 victories. I think that's still a possibility. But we'll see. By the way, Green Bay plays at 3:25, so they're the
late
game. Yep.
All right. Well, we have some correspondence. I want to get to that before we get to pop culture, and acknowledge some of our friends who take the time to write or tweet at us. Captain Dave, our military attaché, uncorked this winter. Fact: John Kuhn and Aaron Ripkowski have never been seen in the same room together.
It's true. Very
that
similar,
is,
yeah.
That is an excellent observation that you would expect from an officer in the United States Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, and also for tweeting at us. And I promised to Captain Dave that we'd have a podcast tonight, and we, sir, are delivering. Also, the winner of – and I think he's probably on a plane by now, Richard Durain, probably on his way out to Vegas to claim his spot in the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino Presidential Suite, in touch with a long list of bullet points, including he has some observations on pop culture, I might add. And I guess I can probably say what his observations are when we get to the pop culture segment. But thank you, Richard, for being in touch. I hope you brought your laptop. You'll be able to correspond with us from the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. We do have complimentary internet service at all of our fine properties around the greater Nevada area. We also received email from Tom Freeman, retired attorney with a magnificent blog that you can check out, West Coast Offensive. He was in touch on behalf of his lovely bride, Judy, who I think Judy plays the betting lines with us, right?
Yes, she does. Yeah. She plays every week with her husband, Tom. That's right.
She does. She plays the betting lines every week with her husband, Tom. But maybe
Poor Judy.
I know Judy. She's obviously a wonderful woman if she's listening to this podcast this far along in it. But Tom writes actually a very humorous email about Judy and Dr. Klaus cohabitating in the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino last year. Let's just put it this way: it was funny and much appreciated. Thank you for that, Tom. Also, the father of the iPhone himself, Chuck P, in touch with us this week. Chuck, we appreciate you continuing to listen. I wonder what invention he will come up with next. It boggles the mind. What technology will Chuck P come up with next? But I'm sure it'll start with the letter I in some way. And I think you also mentioned, or at least when we're talking offline, about John Schwetzel, I believe that's pronounced?
Schweckel.
Like Schweckel.
Like Freckle.
Okay. Well, I don't think he actually said, "Hi, I'm John Schweckel, like Freckle." I don't think he actually
did. I believe he did.
Handle.
Yes, he did in his email.
He did?
Yes.
No, he didn't do that.
I'll look it up right now.
Well, it says, "Sent from my iPhone, please excuse the typos." Well, I think Chuck P would argue that it's so easy to type on that screen. No one ever makes typos. And if you happen to, it would auto-correct and never in a humorous way. John, I appreciate you being in touch. I know we provided a link for you on a particular article, and hopefully that clarified the questions that you had, and thank you for being in touch. Tweeters this week, you know who tweeted at us a couple times, Dave?
Who?
Our man, Chad Reuter. Chad Reuter, a couple tweets. I didn't know he was an econ major when he was in school.
Is that right? Did he correct something economic that we stated, or well, how do you know that?
Well, he wanted to comment. He sent something from Bloomberg TV. It says, "Just in, Fed leaves rates unchanged, sets up possible December hike." And then he gloats and says, "Told you," with a smiley face. And see, not only is Chad a draft expert, the guy, you know, is also apparently on his way to a Nobel Prize in economics.
Yes.
So, yeah,
Bob Dylan, right?
And then Bob Dylan. That's right. There'll be a run on Bob Dylan gear. Yeah. So, but it's always great to hear. Chad has been a contributor on this podcast many times over the years. And we very much appreciate you listening in still. Chad, we want to have you back on. In the meantime, he's doing Milwaukee radio, and he's around. So check out that guy. If he says something about a player and talent, pay attention. The guy knows what he's talking about. He was working for NFL Network for a while, and I think he was with ESPN and different places. So, and also, we have our team chaplain, Pastor Kevin, in touch. And this is a good segue to pop culture. He is encouraging people to check out Rectify. This is something that is on, I believe he said, Sundance Channel.
Yeah.
I watched the first season. I don't know if you did or not. Not a bad show.
I did. Yeah, it's on Netflix too, by the way.
Oh, all right. Okay, so it's on Netflix as well as Sundance.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so anyway, Pastor Kevin, big fan of the show. I think it's in its third season or finished its third season now. I only watched the first season, thought it was good, but not good enough that I wanted to go into the second season with it.
Really?
But it's nice to watch things together with my wife, and, you know, she wasn't as interested in that, and I wasn't committed enough where I was going to watch it on my own. But I thought it was a pretty good show. Do you watch it, Dave?
I have watched – well, I say that because I watched the first two seasons and really liked it, and then for some reason I dropped off. Something else came up, but I do want to finish it. It's a slow burn a bit. The main character is almost Ted Thompson like in his delivery. It's a very interesting show, and like it's very moody. Like the intro music is really interesting, I think, and I liked it a lot. I haven't finished it, so I want to go back to it. I'm glad Pastor Kevin likes it.
And we had a few other tweets as well. Dick Davenport. I mean, come on, that's not a real name, right? But okay, Dick Davenport, Logan Robertson, Rob Gardner. It depends if you need one, I suppose.
Kickback.
I guess it does. Yeah. And I promised that we were, because I know everyone's waiting for Richard Durain's pop culture suggestions. He mentions The Calling, a show called The Calling. It's in season 3. He said it's now one of the top 2 or 3 shows he's ever seen. So that's interesting. I've not seen this show, Dave. Have you?
No, The Calling. I have to look that one up, too. That does not ring a bell to me. The Killing, but not The Calling.
Okay. And also Richard comments on a book he's read called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking, by Susan Cain. I've actually read a review or two of this book, and it's a subject of which I'm quite interested, as a matter of fact. And he recommends this strongly. He says it's a nonfiction book that looks at how America is skewed toward extroverts, but shows how important introverts are. And he's an R&D guy himself, and he says he sees how this plays out at his workplace. And anyway. Called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain.
Yeah.
Have you read this book, Dave?
I have not, but my son, who is a self-described introvert, we gave him that book. I think my wife gave him the book, and he has started to read it. I don't know if he's finished it because of school and everything else, but that has been a highly recommended book, and I really like any recommendations people can give that are along those lines of nonfiction, non-biography type books. Like I'm still finishing Thinking Fast and Slow, which I think is excellent and has really made me think of a few new things at work that I'm going to be trying over the next few weeks, and I just think is really great. So if anyone has books like that they want to recommend, please send them in. And I think I might read that Quiet. I'm still wondering if my son is an introvert because he's still so young. It's hard to label someone yet.
True. Also might be fluid, too. You really don't know as he gets a little older. I know he's in his teens now.
Yeah.
Have you ever taken Myers-Briggs?
A long time ago. So I know a lot about it, but it's been a while. And, you know, and having said that, I think my Myers-Briggs, if I took it 5 times, I got 5 different answers. I changed, you know, through my life for sure.
Well, but my first letter was always the same, though. I was always I. I always had the introvert. Yeah, yeah. And I've taken it maybe 5 times, too. And my other letters are more fluid, but I always come out with the I at the front end of it.
Yeah, I think I was more of an E, but sometimes I answer the questions where I want to be an E. So I think it's been flipped back and forth between. But have you ever had like a Myers-Briggs where they show you how far from center you are?
So yeah, I've seen that.
So I am like bunched in the middle on all 4 categories. And so I can't really figure out who I am, I guess. But
well, my last three letters are usually closer to the middle, but my I is pretty clear.
Yeah.
And you know who also has a I at the beginning of his?
Chuck Pease.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, sir. There's no question about that.
Saw that coming. Yep.
Yeah, mile away. So what have you got for your own self in pop culture?
Yeah, I don't have any good recommendations. I'm still working through Walking Dead. This is a return. And Westworld is – I watched the latest one tonight, and it's really going into weird places. I have to listen to a podcast to sort of explain it to me.
Yeah. What I do is I read the reviews in Vulture and AV Club to try to, you know, get them to piece it together. It's tough.
What happened?
Exactly.
a great show to try to predict what's coming, but it is confusing. And it's so sick. I think what they're doing is they're playing with time here. I don't think there's a spoiler because it's I have no way to predict it, but this is not a linear show, what they're showing you. Anyway, it's a great show. I really enjoy watching it, but it's confusing. go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't have any good ones either. I have a lot of bad ones to recommend, but nothing good. But I'm kind of watching. I'm in the middle of a number of these seasons right now, and one of them is Westworld. And I totally agree with you that it's compelling, it's interesting, but
it's good to look at, right?
Oh yeah, it's great to look at, but you know, really trying to know and understand what's going on, it is that dense. I've heard it compared to Lost that way.
Oh,
and you were a Lost guy, right?
I was, and yeah, I think with Lost, I wasn't like, where are they going with this? I think it was more like there are so many threads that they're not going to tie these up, and they didn't, and so this one I can't even understand what's going on. You know, it's there are mazes, and you don't know if people are real, and there's so many unknown factors in the show. I think you just have to kind of watch it and just experience it and hope that by the end you can have this great revelation of and then you probably don't want to go back and watch it again knowing what's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but it's a testimony, in my opinion, Dave, that how good the show is, that a lot of times if a show is that confusing and opaque, if it's not a good show, you're not gonna come back to it every week.
Right.
This show is good enough that it can be confusing and opaque, and you know, you're still saying, wow, this is really cool. I'm interested to find out what's going on here.
Yeah.
And that really says something, I think, about it. Now, is it the greatest show I've ever seen on television? I don't think it's ever gonna be close to that. But it is really worth watching, just if nothing else, just to try it out and see, because it's really a well-made TV show.
You know what's a movie that's not confusing is Ghostbusters, which is one movie I saw on the plane.
Okay, now the new one, I assume.
The new one, with the female Ghostbusters. Actually, better than I thought the trailer would make it, but it still was pretty bad and not really necessary to make. The one thing I would recommend is a board game that I bought this week, and I haven't played it yet, but if you buy board games, don't read the manual. Go to YouTube and watch someone play it or explain the instructions to you on YouTube. That's a much better way to do it. And Dr. Klaus will appreciate this. It's called Letters from Whitechapel, which is a game where someone plays Jack the Ripper and the other players are detectives trying to catch him. And so I bought that.
Sounds like Clue.
Yeah, except you're not playing against each other. It's a co-op against one person kind of a game. And board games are great. There are such really fun board games that are more toward the end. If someone wants a list of good board games, just send it to me. And between Dr. Klaus and me, we can give you a bunch of good ones. But I'm looking forward to playing this one. That's probably a lot what I'll play with the kids this weekend.
And if you like serial killers,
up your alley.
Which apparently,
great, The Fall, great activity to do with the kids. Yeah,
exactly. Well, the show The Fall is entered its third season. It's on Netflix. Well, the thing about these British shows, you know, when we think of, you know, a season, they call it a series. I think the first one had five installments. The second one has six. So they have 11 installments in the first two series of the show. We would call them seasons. But that would actually be probably, you know, one peak TV season, 11 episodes. So we've watched those, and now we're just entering the third season, which is I think just been released in the last week or so. It stars Gillian Anderson, people who liked X-Files, same person, but with a British accent, though. She does live in London, after all. And also Jamie Dornan, who was most recently in 50 Shades of Grey, the movie. He played Grey, I guess, and not Don Grey, not our friend Don Grey. No, but a guy named Grey. So it's actually very good. If you like serial killer, you know, kind of hunting, psychological thriller type things, recommend this. Like I said, even though there are two seasons already, it's only 11 episodes, so it's not that hard to get through. And if you like it, it just started up the third season. So I would say if you like that sort of thing, check it out.
Yeah, you know, I just remind me of another one on Netflix, because I think The Fall is on Netflix. Right. Black Mirror Season 3 came out. I watched the first episode, and they really are great stories. The first one I really, really enjoyed. I watched it with my wife, and it was really fun. So if you like Twilight Zone or technology, and the blend between the two sounds really good, I would think Chuck P would like this. Black Mirror is a great series to try. Just watch the third episode of Season 1, I believe, or watch the first episode of Season 3. And you'll get a sense of what it's like. You're great. I really enjoy those.
Oh, you know, I think I'm going to check that one out. I've read a lot about it, but I haven't ever talked to anybody that's actually seen one. So now that I've heard your recommendation, I might check out Black Mirror on Netflix.
Yeah, it's really fun. I would, anyone that likes technology, I think would really, really enjoy it. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see if you watch it and tell me what you think.
All right. Well, you know, this has been yet another quality podcast. Congratulations, Dave.
Thank
you. You've done a wonderful job. We've analyzed the Packers' one-point defeat. We've looked forward to the game against the Colts. We've set your betting lines. We've congratulated the people that won last time. We've acknowledged our emailers. We've given you quality pop culture information for you to chew on over the next I guess it's not going to be a week, but it's probably going to be about, 5 or 6 days until we come back on with another Packers therapy. And we'll be talking about that Colts game, 3:25 p.m. Lambeau Field time on Sunday. I know Dave's going to be watching. I know I'm going to be watching. And until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.